and welcome to Plenential's podcast, Future Rich. My name is Barbara Ginty, and I'm your host, and I am also a CFP, which stands for a Certified Financial Planner. And I'm here today with my guest, Lauren. Hi, Lauren.
Hello.
Thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you for the spreadsheet. You know, I love a good Excel spreadsheet.
Yeah, no problems, because I love Excel.
Me too. So why don't you fill me and our listeners in, give us the overview for age, location, marital status, all that jazz.
Sure. So I'm 27 years old. I live in Connecticut with my boyfriend. We are not married. As far as my job goes, I'm an actuary. So essentially, it's a lot of math, a lot of Excel. I analyze the cost of retirement benefits.
Oh, well, this makes actuary is a tough role because you have have you taken your actuarial exams?
I'm on kind of the second set of exams. I'm officially an actuary, but I have more exams to go. So
yeah, it's quite the process. Do you want to give everybody an overview of what it is?
Yeah. So essentially, I think to get your designation, you have to pass something like 5 exams, each of which take a couple hundred hours, 200 or 300 hours to study for. And then you also have to do like a bunch of projects. And so it usually takes, I think it took me about 3 years to get my designation. And then I have another like 3 years to get kind of a higher level of designation. So it's just lots of studying.
Yeah, I have a friend do it. And it's quite the process.
Yeah, it really is. The nice thing about it is essentially I'm getting more schooling, but I don't have to pay for it. My employer pays for it. So it's a pretty sweet deal.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So you were probably like a math major, I take it?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Awesome. And so you work in retirement, or you analyze retirement benefits?
Yes.
Great.
Well, so I think that's partly why I'm so concerned about my financials.
Very good. Okay, so you're 27, in Connecticut, an actuary, working in retirement. And how much do you make?
Did you say? I make $96,000 a year.
Fantastic.
And then I also get bonuses.
Perfect. And you probably will get pay raises as you go through your exam process, right?
Yeah, I still have a little bit to go. I think I'm starting to near kind of where my salary level's out, but I have a little bit
of room. Perfect. So $96,000 gross, and then you get bonuses, which is wonderful.
I would estimate about $15,000 a year in bonuses.
That's awesome. Okay, great. And then you're renting, right?
So I actually own a triplex, okay. And I live in one of the units.
Triplex, so it's 3 units.
Yes.
Okay, because I was looking at the spreadsheet and I was like, I see rent line item, but then I also saw a house on here. So I was like,
Yeah, so the way I think about it, and maybe you have a better way to look at it, is I try to keep my house separate from my personal life. So I kind of pay myself rent as far as how I keep track of my budget. And then the house, makes or loses money on its own.
So you treat it as a business. So you have basically the property that you own and you rent from your property is the way you view it.
That's the way I look at it. I don't think it's the way it's on my taxes, but it makes more sense to me.
That's totally fine. And that makes more sense now that I'm looking at your spreadsheet, because I was like, I was looking at it and I was like, I wasn't totally sure, but that makes total sense. I actually do that with my business. My business pays rent to my property. And so I mark it down as rent, because then you're treating it as an entity and you're trying to make sure it has a profit on its own. Because if it wasn't you renting, it would be somebody else, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Perfect. Okay. That's great. So you have 2 tenants then?
Yes.
I love a good side hustle. So that's a side hustle. How long have you owned it? What type of mortgage did you end up getting for it? Because usually that it works differently when it's more than single family.
So I just have a conventional 30-year mortgage, fixed rate mortgage. I bought it in July 2019. So it hasn't been all that long. And I kind of fell into it. I was initially just looking for a house and then figured it would be better to go the route of a multifamily.
Yeah, absolutely. And how is it with so you have 2 tenants. How is it managing that? Because you obviously have a serious career.
Yeah, they've been great. I mean, it's relatively limited work. And it also helps that I'm in kind of a fairly desirable area with lots of young professionals. So we were able to get really good tenants. It's, a lot of it's just about screening your tenants.
Yeah, absolutely, because that makes or breaks it. Perfect. Okay, so let's go over your expenses. So maybe we'll do your expenses and then talk upkeep the house separate. Is that
okay? Okay.
So your net pay, we'll break it down maybe so for like a monthly amount just to keep it a little even since expenses here are monthly.
Yep.
So you bring home about, we'll just use round numbers, like $5,300 a month?
Yes.
Perfect. And then rent is $600 with, heat, electric, Wi-Fi, we're at $125. Car insurance, gas, dog. We add all of this up. Everything seems like very reasonable. Your total for the month comes to, we'll just call it $2,700.
Yeah, and I think that's where it gets a little difficult is I've not been the best about budgeting. I just kind of look at, are my savings going up or down? And that may be something I need to work on. And so if you'll see on my thing, I have $1,000 listed for food, drinks, entertainment. Mm-hmm. And essentially that's just a black hole. Like I have no clue where that money is going. It was like, I know I've been spending about $2,700 a month. I can come up with these other expenses and then $1,000 falls into a black hole every month, which is probably not the best way to manage your finances.
Hey, the first step is recognizing it. It's the first step. Okay, so we will figure out the black hole. We'll see what's going on over there. And then and then I'm just looking at a few other things here. So even with the black hole, right? So you have like you should have about $2,600 left over a month.
Yeah.
And I also see that you put down like a post-COVID budget. So obviously you're saving a bit of money with COVID.
Yeah, in theory. Last year, like 2020, I spent probably more money because of COVID because I was just kind of, I think, treating myself a lot. Yeah. But this year I've gotten things back on track. And so I am saving money as a result of COVID.
Okay, perfect. That's good. Nice to try and take advantage a little. So, okay, so we're doing fine from like a cash flow standpoint, meaning like what you have coming in versus what you have going out, we have excess. So then let's talk about, your household budget looks fine. We'll tweak it here and there, but we'll figure out what's going on with the black hole. And then what about the property that supports itself up, I think, I would imagine?
Yeah, so right now, I mean, this year it's doing pretty well because I haven't had many expenses, but based on my kind of estimates, mm-hmm. After accounting for, the costs, expenses, with the property and vacancy, I expect to bring in about $600 a month from the property. And that's with me living here, doing snow removal and lawn care. I would have to pay $320 a month for most likely for a property manager if I was to move out and decide not to manage it. And then I'd also have to pay for lawn care and snow removal. So it would pay for itself, but I would not be bringing in a lot of money from it.
Yeah, so it would cover its cost. You would have another asset on your ballot, on your net worth statement, but you wouldn't be making as much money. So right now you're making about $600 a month. And you're not including that in your income. No. The income we were looking at is just your salary. So then you get another approximate $600 from the property.
Correct.
So if you think about it, it almost negates your rent. You're almost living rent-free.
Yeah, I essentially am living rent free. Right.
Yeah. Okay. And just another way to look at it, because that's fantastic. Because I do encourage people to try and usually one of the biggest issues I see for people is they're spending too much on housing, and that prevents using your money for other things. So you nailed that. That's fantastic. So let's talk about then debt and savings. So it looks like because I have like the spreadsheet here, so it makes it much easier for me. So it looks like you have a little bit of debt just for furniture, but then you're doing a really good job with all your savings. So do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. Yeah. So I had bought some furniture last year, and I think I had like 6 months interest free. So I just went ahead and put it on credit. But I plan on paying that off as soon as the 6 month period expires.
Okay.
And then beyond that, I don't have any debt. I have about $130,000 in retirement savings. Perfect. And that consists of a 401k, Roth IRA, and an HSA account. And then additionally, I have about $70,000 of equity in the house, a couple grand in treasuries, and $60,000 in cash.
Which I think the cash is super important because, as you said, you haven't had any major maintenance issues with the house. So that's great that you have a really solid emergency fund.
So I probably should add to that, but I am planning on buying another house with that cash.
Okay.
Yeah. So I may need to true up my emergency fund a little bit. I expect to probably spend about somewhere around 40 grand on another house, which will leave me around 20 grand left over.
Okay. So well, at least you still have liquidity, which is good. So walk me through. So what are you doing with the next house? Will that be for you or what are you thinking?
No, that's purely an investment property.
Ah, music to my ears. Okay. So is it in the same vicinity? What's the profit and loss going to look like on that?
No. So it's an interesting story. I haven't found the specific house yet, but I'm looking out of state because I have a mentor that lives out of state. And so he's kind of on the ground looking for houses and will ultimately be the property manager.
Okay.
And so the houses I've been looking at, you know, vary a little bit, but they'll take somewhere around 40 grand down. And I expect to make between 5,000 and 7,000 a year from what I, based on the numbers I've run so far.
Perfect. Can I ask what state it's in?
Upstate New York.
Oh yeah. Okay. You can tell me offline if you want, but I'm from upstate New York. So very curious.
Me too.
Oh, you are? I'm from Woodstock originally.
Oh, awesome.
Very nice. Okay, great. So then you're going to have an additional revenue stream coming in there, and then you'll have a property manager. And that's what you expect to, in finance speak, mean net, meaning you think you'll pocket between 5,000 and 7,000 a year.
Yeah, that's after like accounting for vacancy and all expenses.
Perfect. That's fantastic. Yeah, so I would, especially since you right now, your budget is a little, you're saving, it looks like about 500 a month between your current expenses and what you think it'll be post-COVID, like when you can go to a gym again and you have to spend more on gas, right? Those sort of expenses. So I would definitely put a little bit more towards the emergency fund because then you're going to have two properties. And then that way you just have more cash available if, God forbid, something happens.
And do you have an idea like on what that number should be that we get to? I was going to try to do a little bit more research, but I was thinking if I get to 30, 35 grand, that probably is good.
I think that would be pretty good. It's like hard to know because it just depends on the property, what things are going to cost, you know? So my scary story, which is a true story, is I had a sewage issue on one of my properties and sewage lines aren't covered with your traditional insurance. So that ran me 30,000.
Oh my.
So, but I would say up until that point, all of the things, like the most expensive thing was a roof. I think that was like 10,000. So it just depends on what needs to be done on the property. But I think I would say, yeah, somewhere between 30 and 40,000 would be comfortable. Worst case scenario, you run into something major or massive like I did. You could deal with it at the time. You could use a 0% APR card, right? Would be your absolute worst case. And then, or you could pay more in rent, right? Because you're living rent free and then help offset it that way. But I would say somewhere between 30 and 40,000.
Okay.
So you won't be that far off and you should be able to save that, you know, especially with what you're saving now, you know, what you have coming in on the current property and then what you're saving from the COVID budget. It's about 1,100 a month besides what you don't use during the month.
I guess one question I have for you is when you look at emergency funds, are you looking at purely cash? Because I guess one thing I look at is in a worst case scenario, I have access to more assets by virtue of, you know, tapping into my HSA, tapping into my Roth IRA, or tapping into the equity in my house. Now, you know, I would never want to do that, but in a very, very worst case, you know, I need money to stay in my house. You could do that. Is that something that you take into account when you're coming up with an emergency fund?
No, I look at like what I think you need as a cash holding and not using those because those to me are like worst case scenarios. I would say the order I would do it is target the emergency fund. Then from there, you could take equity out of the house, but you could run into, because did you put the equity in your current home? Did you put 20% down?
Yeah.
Okay. So then you could probably tap into it. Not everyone does that. So sometimes that's not an option, depending on what your loan to value ratio is. And then the last thing, and I almost never recommend it, would be to borrow from your 401k. But that to me, that would have to be like a very dire situation.
Thanks.
I like to protect the retirement so much. I like don't ever want to touch it because I feel like, not that it's a habit, but I like to think of that as like future money. And if it means that you're going to like lose your house and, you know, they're going to foreclose on it, yes, obviously, then we need to consider using the 401k. But if it's something not like that, I wouldn't go near it. I always think it needs to be protected.
Perfect.
And then the emergency fund is really easy to come up with a number when you're just worried about your own personal expenses. But the way that I like to look at it with your proper is you're running two small businesses.
Essentially. Right?
Essentially. So, you know, what you would need for 6 months of expenses, you know, basically, let's say the $2,700, if you shot for a year, would be $32,000 to cover yourself if you lost your job with just your expenses. But that's why, so I think somewhere between 30 and 40,000 would be a comfortable number because you're running these, you know, two real estate ventures, right? Your investment properties, plus you have yourself and you're supporting it with your job. And so I think that would be a conservative number to have liquid. And then, you know, then you have your fallbacks from there. I would say the first fallback and the most prudent would be using some of the equity in your home if, God forbid, there was an emergency.
Okay.
Yeah, well, that's exciting. So you like the investment property route?
Yeah, I really like it. I'm just taking it kind of day by day. I don't have plans to necessarily go and buy 10 properties, but two didn't seem too bad. So,
yeah, absolutely. And it's a nice way to supplement your income, and you're building equity in those properties. So I think that's fantastic. And then, you know, when you go to retire down the road, you could always sell them. And then you have additional money because basically ideally the tenants are paying your mortgage, right? So
that's the hope. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And then, so you have a lot saved, you've done a good job saving for retirement because you're 27. So that's a fantastic number. And the fact that you're about to buy your second investment property. So how much are you putting in? What percentage are you putting into your 401k?
Sure, I put in 6% of pay, and I put in 3% Roth and 3% traditional.
Nice, split it up. Okay. And then your employer contributes?
10%.
Wow, that is fantastic. Yeah, you're really lucky. So you're at a 16% savings ratio, which is fantastic. And do they match on your bonus too?
Yes.
Awesome. Man, that's fantastic. It's all about the benefits, right? So that really means you're making a lot more, because if your bonus in 2020, you said, was $17,000.
Yeah.
And so your company matched 10% on that?
Yeah. So that it would have been additional $1,700.
Yeah. That's fantastic. In addition to what they're matching on your salary. So they're putting in like about $11,000 for you a year.
Awesome.
Yeah. Which is great. That really adds up. Okay, perfect. All right. So you're nailing the retirement. You have a good savings ratio for retirement. I love the investment property idea. I do it myself. I think it's a great way to grow your net worth. Sounds like you know what you're doing. Just as long as you're cautious, screen tenants, have cash. So what else do we have going on here? I see some upcoming expenses.
So I think my big fear is right now, I feel like I'm in very good financial shape. But mm-hmm. I just look kind of 3 to 5 years in the future and I see a bunch of big expenses, and all of a sudden I go from saving, you know, $2,500 or, you know, $2,600 a month to not saving anything based on what I'm looking at. So that's where you come in. So my car is pretty much at the end of its life. So I'm looking either this year or next year to buy a new car.
Okay.
And I would expect that to increase my expenses. I was looking at maybe an $18,000 car. And that'll increase my expenses by close to $400 a month.
Okay.
I'd also like to move into a single family house within the next, you know, 3 to 5 years.
Okay.
And I was looking at the prices, at least in this area. It's really expensive if you want to be in an area with a good school district. Okay. So you're looking at houses, you know, if you want a 3 or 4 bedroom house, you're looking at fairly modest houses. Or maybe I shouldn't say 3 or 4 bedroom is modest, but you're looking, you know, 1,800 square foot house is $350,000. And I was looking at the mortgage with that. That's like just $2,400 a month, just in mortgage.
Yes.
And then additionally, I guess the final big one is, you know, would like to have a child within the next 5 years. And I was looking at the childcare costs and the other costs associated. And so, you know, you can easily see an increase in my budget of over $2,000 if I don't make adjustments.
Okay, well, you're definitely a planner. I can tell you're an actuary. So, yes, all very good concerns, but all, I would say, things that you want to do, right? And, you know, this is nothing extravagant, having a child paying for childcare. I think that one thing you're not looking at is that if you move out of your, we'll just call it apartment that you would rent that out, right?
Yeah.
And so wouldn't that probably make more than 600?
So realistically, so right now it's the market rent for this place is probably 1200 to 1300 a month.
Yeah.
Okay. My boyfriend pays 600. So that's why I kind of accounted my expense at 600.
Got it.
So presumably, okay, if we moved out, he would, you know, be still making some contribution towards the new house. So basically, okay, his contribution and mine would just be shifted over.
Okay. So if it was 2400, we'll just say for the single family, let's say he pays 800.
Yeah.
Maybe. So that leaves you with 1600. But then shouldn't the rent increase on, or did you account for that with that property? So like if you're not living there.
If I'm not living there, at most, I think I'd get an extra 100 a month.
Into your budget would be 100.
Yeah, because we'd go from right now, because basically when I count how much the house is making, it's assuming I'm paying 1200 a month between my wife and I in rent. So once we move out, maybe we can get 1300.
Okay. Not a huge difference. Okay. I'm just trying to think. So basically your house expense would double, right? Because you would go from paying 600 to each paying 1200. Would he be able to pay 1200? Or
I don't think my boyfriend could afford to pay 1200.
1200. Okay.
So like likely I was thinking, yes, 800 maybe would be a stretch. And so maybe I'd pay the remaining 1600. And then on top of that, you have additional, you know, not paying just your mortgage, you also have additional expenses.
Yeah, you have taxes and insurance. Yeah.
Oh, so to be clear, I'm sorry, the 2400 includes taxes and insurance.
Oh, it does. Okay.
Yeah, so it's monthly payment for mortgage, taxes, insurance, interest. It just doesn't include, you know, your hot water tank goes and now you have to replace that. Yeah. It doesn't include income utilities.
It could potentially help be offset by this new property that you're having if you make $5,000 to $7,000 a year.
Yeah, that could help.
Right, that could kind of negate some of that cost, so it's not as much of an increase.
Yeah, I think that would definitely help, you know, assuming I am able to make 5 to 7 a year.
Yeah, because that would be another 600 a month, right, coming in.
Yeah.
And maybe then if your boyfriend's living with you and you're paying more, maybe then he handles the mowing of the lawn and the snow removal at the other property to save you the 300.
That would be great.
A month, right? Because that would be like, you don't have the money, but maybe you can help out in other ways. And so then that way, that house is still, you're making a profit of 600 a month. And then the other house that you're going to buy, the future house, is 600 a month. So that brings in 1200 a month to you, right? And then the new house cost is 2400. You cover half of that with the investment properties that you have.
Yeah.
Right? So then your expense doesn't go up quite as much. It goes up, but now you have, you know, a single family, more space, right? So your expenses are going to go up, but they're offset. So you're not shouldering the whole expense by the two investment properties. And I think that initially, maybe even if you take turns doing the property management, that's a nice monthly savings, right? Of 300 a month. That would help offset the new single family if that's the route you go.
Yeah, I think that definitely would be helpful.
And then childcare is just really expensive.
Yeah, that's what I'm coming to learn. I had coworkers talking about it and I was like, wait, it costs how much?
Mm-hmm. It costs a lot. I would say I just talked to someone recently and they said they were able to find like someone who does it out of their home. They only take on so many children. It's like not as formal, right? And then that was, they were able to get some savings from that. But yeah, childcare in general is really expensive. And so I definitely think it's absolutely worth planning for. But you could also, I know you said you're like probably reaching the higher end of your income, but you do have that wiggle, like right now you are able to save that amount of money. And so maybe in the future, you're not able to save as much, but since you know that that's coming up down the road, I would save as much as you can between now and then. And then childcare isn't permanent, right? So that would be an expense you would pay until the child goes to school. So that would be a temporary increase. But if you know that you're planning on having a child in the next 5 years, then you can start saving for it in advance to kind of help buffer that. Basically, what the child would go to childcare from 6 months to four and a half.
Right.
So like 4 years, maybe you plan for. So you could help buffer that expense where maybe you've saved part of that money up. And so then that way it's not as much on your monthly because you set aside a fund for childcare in the future.
And do you suggest saving it for in a, like an actual fund designated to that? I've traditionally just kind of saved everything in one giant mess, but
I like
separate.
I like naming things like with savings. Like I like to segment them out. Just for me, it's easier to, I like to be able to visualize it. And so to be able to see it line item for me has been easier. But whatever works for you, I think that since you have all those expenses coming up on the future and you don't think your income is going to be growing significantly in the next 5 years, you're doing all the right things. You're going to offset basically, you're going to help support 50% of what you want in a single family home, like what the mortgage amount is going to be, what you're going to need to spend with your investment property. So I think that's fantastic. You have a lot of saving capacity right now. You're doing a great job on retirement. You're doing a great job investing outside of retirement with the investment property. So saving more cash so that you don't feel as much pressure when these life events come up, I think would be great. And I normally say you don't invest your money unless you have a 2-year time horizon, but since some of this is 5 years out, you could even invest it into a regular investment account, meaning not a retirement account, your own private investment account. And so that money could be exposed to the market if you wanted it to and not just sitting in cash, but either is fine. And the only reason I would say to not that you don't have to have it in cash is because of the time horizon that it's, you know, you're earmarking it for 5 years out. It could be 4 years, it could be 6 years, right? We don't know. And when you get a little bit closer, when it's like less than a 2-year time horizon, you probably need to reevaluate that. But for right today, with today's information, I would say you could invest that extra money into the market and, you know, let it grow. And then that way you have that earmarked for, you know, potential childcare expenses down the road, or, you know, 5 years, a lot can change, right? So you have time for it to grow. And then if you, you know you're going to be ready to have a child, then I would be a lot more conservative with that money. But that's another option too.
I guess one thing to add, I said my income was starting to level out. I still think within the next 5 years or so, it'll still likely grow. I think like 125 is usually where it starts leveling out for actuaries.
Okay.
Would you kind of take that into account when you're looking at your future expenses?
Yeah, absolutely. Because that's another, on your base salary, you think it could go to 125 on your...
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. I think that may be over the next, you know, 5 to 7 years.
Yeah. So that's another $25,000 a year. That would definitely take care of childcare.
Okay.
And it would also cover the car.
Yeah.
No one has ever said to me, I've saved too much money. I haven't had anyone ever say that to me. No one's ever been like, you know, shoot, I wish I didn't put, you know, save so much money. It's never happened.
And do you think it's a bad idea to finance the car? That's what I'm leaning towards. Like, or would you prefer to save up for it and buy it in cash? My thoughts are, as long as I can get a low interest rate to go ahead and
I would say as long as you can get a low interest rate, just because you have been so diligent with everything. So, you know, if someone who is like totally debt ridden, I would not encourage taking out an additional loan, but I mean, you don't have any debt. You have mortgage debt, but those are for your investment properties. Those are strategic. So I would see no issue with you getting a low interest rate car loan at all.
Awesome.
Yeah. What I would do in the near term is I would get your emergency fund back up after you get this next property, just so that you have more flexibility with cash, just God forbid something happens. And obviously if you're thinking like you might want to buy a single family house down the road, that cash, I would just start storing more cash because you're going to need another down payment in the future. And while you have this such great wiggle room with your budget, you know, you like basically $2,500 a month. So I would start saving that. And then that way you can get the emergency fund up and you can have another, series of cash for another down payment. And then I don't know that I would worry so much about the childcare and the house, because I do think, especially if you keep doing these exams, you will get your base salary up and that will be covered if you get up to 125. That's another, you know, it's actually another 29,000 a year. That's a pretty big jump.
Okay.
And so that would cover it. And then the alternative is also the fact that the properties, you know, if you do, if you continue to do, and you don't have to do it forever, but, you know, let's say when you go to buy the single family home, your gross pay is up to 110. It's not at 125. Well, then do the property management on the property so that you save that extra 300. And then when you get the next raise and you can afford it, then you could get the property manager, right?
Yeah. No, I'm perfectly happy to manage the property as long as I stay in Connecticut. I think the only thing that would change is if we moved out of state.
Yeah, that would make it really hard. Yeah. Then it would make no sense to drive or fly to do the lawn care, right? Exactly. So yeah, as long as you're there, I would save the money. But yeah, I would reevaluate it if you left the area. But I don't think you're going to have any issue with the expenses in the future. I think you'll probably keep bumping up as you take your exams. And then from now till then, I would just keep saving. Because if you want to buy another house, you're going to need the down payment money anyway.
Yeah. So do you think like a 2 to 3 year time horizon on the house is too soon then?
No, I mean, because if you can save $2,500 a month, that's $30,000 a year.
Okay.
So if you... like, so let's just say, well, let's just pretend you've already used 40 for this next property. So you're down to 20. And then if you keep saving the 2,500 a month for the next 2 years, you're saving another 60,000. And then we'll just pretend you have 20. So that's it. Then you're at 80,000 in the bank. So you have money again for a down payment. And then you still have a really healthy emergency fund.
Awesome. And do you have any other kind of recommendations as far as things I should be saving for?
No, I mean, I think you're doing a great job. You're probably the first person that's this young that's on, they're going to be on their second investment property. So kudos to you.
Thanks.
Yeah, you're doing a really good job. I would definitely, especially because like, as you kind of pointed out, childcare is expensive, you know, life can get more expensive with those life changes. I would totally take advantage of the fact that you can save that $2,500 and I would bite the bullet and do it for the next 2 years, save your, bump up that emergency fund a bit because then you're going to have three properties and then you'll have money saved for your next down payment before life gets a little complicated.
Awesome.
That's what I would do. Because then, you know, childcare here is for one child. Like if you have two, you know, and then that way you kind of set yourself up before you were 30 for everything to kind of be on autopilot, right? Because at that point, let's just say there's another... let's just give you a scenario with your retirement. So in the next 2 years, let's just use 100 and yeah, 100. Let's do your bonus was 17,000, your base is 96. So 113,000, you're putting in 6%. The company's putting in 10%. So we're at 16%. So you're putting in 18,000 between both. Right?
Right. And then in addition to that, my employer maxes out my HSA each year.
Which is phenomenal. So we'll just times that by two. So there's another 36,000 that's going to go into your 401k. And so you're at 127 now, right?
Mm-hmm.
Plus another. So you're over 150,000 by the time you're 29, right?
Awesome.
Which is fantastic. And so you've kind of, you've set yourself up because then you just 160. So you're at the age of 30. So then at 40, it's going to be 320. And then at 50, it's going to be 640. And then at 60, it's going to be, math is getting, you'll be at 1.2 million, right?
Yep.
Almost 1.3 million. And then if you wait till 70, which you won't need to, it'll be at 2.6 million. And that's not including the investments or the HSA, the investment properties or the HSA. So you've just really set yourself up because if that 60 of 1.3 saved, that's without putting another dollar in. That's just from 29 on with it growing. If it's disclaimer, because I have to do that. If it's earning 7.2% compounding interest, there's the disclaimer. But you see, and you have no debt, right? Other than the mortgages for the investment company, the investments, but in real estate investments, but those are getting paid by the tenants. And yes, if no one pays rent, you can get into trouble, but it's, you have a risk like that in any business. But just with your 401k, if we just look at that projection and you didn't put another dollar in and your employer never contributed again past 29, that's the anticipated, you know, using that return of the value at 60. So if you buckle down for the next 2 years, you'll put yourself in a great position so that you know, when you do have a child and there is that childcare cost, you can pause for a little bit and it's not going to disrupt your future plans.
I guess the one thing to add is in order to get my full match, I have to contribute 6% of pay.
Oh yeah, so that's totally fine. But this projection is just saying if you didn't make another contribution after 29.
Okay.
Yeah, so you don't, let's just say, not that you would do this, but at the age, so if you don't put another dollar in after 24 months from now, right, you do the full thing from now, 24 months out, and then you don't put another dollar in, that's what the value would be. So even if you just paused for a year or two, which you probably will be able to make it work, but if you thought about a worst case scenario, you're still going to be in a great spot for retirement because you buckled down and did all of this before you were 30. So you have the power of time on your hands, which you can't buy back. So yeah, you're in a good spot. So I would just do this for the next 2 years and bulk up your cash so that you have that great emergency fund and you have your next down payment ready to go. And then I would see where you are in after those 2 years versus what your salary is and where you are with family planning. And I think you'll be able to cover it with the rental income and the raise. I don't think you're going to feel as strapped as you're, as it projects out to be.
Okay. That would be awesome.
Yeah. And then worst case, you know, if you make that sacrifice where you're not going to save for retirement for 2 years or 3 years to help cover the cost of daycare, because that's what the budget has to be, which I would be very surprised about, you aren't derailing your retirement because you did such a good job pre-30.
Perfect.
Yeah.
I've tried to keep my expenses down to make it really easy to save kind of in these early years. So even though my budgeting hasn't always been great, I've kept my, I think, fixed expenses really low.
Yeah, I think you've done a great job. So I actually wouldn't even really worry about the food, drinks, and entertainment. If you can save the $2,500 a month that we talked about, which you're able to do with the black hole, I would just keep doing it.
Okay.
So I, because you even had we even have vacation in there with the current budget.
Yeah.
So I don't, unless you feel like you're sacrificing too much, then I would go through and look and line item, like, where is the food and drinks going? But if you feel like you're enjoying your life, then I would keep going. Because if you can save the $2,500 a month, that's huge. That's $60,000 in the next 2 years.
Awesome.
Yeah, I'm all about really sacrificing in the beginning. That's what I did. I saved a ton of money in my 20s. And now speaking to you from my 30s, it was the best decision I ever made.
Perfect. Hopefully I'll be there in a few years.
Absolutely. I think it's totally worth it because my attitude on it was, you know, I'm not in the position where I have a ton of money anyway, so I might as well, if I'm going to be broke, I'd rather be like really broke and have and save a lot of money and just, you know, not take taxis, not take Uber, like take the subway, walk a lot of places. So I just kept my budget like really, really low and just socked away a ton of money in my 401k. And to me, it was like the best thing I ever did.
So I should probably add that the rent at the place we're staying at is actually higher than what I'd initially been pushing for. I was trying to keep prices low, almost to a cost low, almost to a fault, where I was trying to get my boyfriend to move into like the smaller apartment that would have been $900 a month total. He was like, no, you're crazy. Like we can afford $1,200 between the two of us.
That's funny. I have two rentals and then the one property is like kind of, it's like a mother-in-law situation, not like a pure separated utilities or whatever. And so when I got this one, my father is like, you should move into the apartment. And I like really thought about it. And then I was like, nah, I've been saving for literally 15 years. Like I'm going to live in the bigger section. And he was like, you should live in the basement. And I'm like, no, I think I've earned the upstairs at this point. I mean, they've made like a lot of sacrifices to do it. So yeah, it's okay to splurge a little too, because you're doing a good job with the savings.
Awesome.
Cool. Well, do you have any other questions for me?
I think that's it.
Okay, awesome. Well, I appreciate you coming on the podcast. It was great to chat about this.
Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate all the advice.
Yeah, absolutely. So for our lovely listeners, the best place to follow us is on Instagram at Future Rich Podcast. And you can check out our online classes that are in partnership with SUNY Ulster at www.futurerichpodcast.com.